first of all. And just to start off, for the transcript, could you just state your name?
Benson Kirkman.
Okay. And I wanted to start by asking you a little bit about your background, where you're from, for example, your education, your career, and those sorts of things.
I was born in Greensboro, North Carolina, but my father was in Agricultural Extension Service. We lived literally across the state. My first memories are from Boone, which is where my parents were living at the time I was born. But we also lived in Raleigh, when my father was in graduate school, and Beaufort and Windsor on the coast, as well as Marion up in the mountains again. So spent a lot of my time on both ends of the state as a child, and then ended up here in the middle.
And just your education and career?
I graduated from, we moved back to Raleigh when I started the ninth grade, and I graduated from Broughton High School, and then attended NC State as an undergraduate, went to University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill for 2 years, and then to correct my erred ways there, I came back to NC State, was talked into getting a master's, and then subsequently into getting a PhD in ornamental horticulture and plant ecology. My real major was plant ecology, but they didn't really quite give a degree in that. And since my paycheck came from horticulture, that was the lead on my title, but I'm literally a plant ecologist.
Yeah, so you earned your doctorate in plant ecology, at
right.
least, in fact. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your relationship with Wells, what you knew of him.
Well, I first heard of Wells through my father. When my father was an undergraduate at NC State, he had B.W. Wells as a botany professor, even though my father was an animal science major.
Okay.
And he said it was one of the most remarkable courses that he had in his tenure at NC State, and he remembered it very well. And he particularly remembered Wells' attitude about teaching and learning, that it was an interactive and something that went on continuously. And since my father became not a teacher in the classical sense, but he became an educator, worked in cooperative education, Agricultural Extension Service first and then in cooperative education here in Raleigh with the old Farmers Cooperative Exchange, and then finished his career with USDA in Washington in farmer cooperative education, and actually has a library named for him. That is obviously something that stuck with my father.
Right.
And my father was always an animal guy. You know, he grew up on a farm, but at the same time, he said that Wells got him a lot more interested in the plant kingdom as well.
And this is the library at University of District of Columbia.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So I knew of him that way. And when I came back to school to NC State, I'd heard of Wells when I was an undergraduate. But again, still, he was sort of a distant thought in many ways. When I came back and decided to get a master's degree and started doing research, both my master's and my PhD, I was really interested in the ecology of the particular plants I was working with and the plant communities that they grew in.
Right.
So it led me back the path to B.W. Wells. Art Cooper served, well, I was actually an informal member of my master's committee and then served as co-chair of my PhD committee. He was a plant ecologist who knew Wells and studied with him. Chuck Davey was on my PhD committee, and he knew of Wells and his work. So it was a very good marriage. My principal advisor was Jim Ballington from Horticulture, who was in blueberries. And again, it seemed I was always led continually back to Wells. Wells, for those of us who've studied the history, we believe that he should have credit for the blueberry industry in North Carolina. Some of his field work, when he was out doing study, he would plant blueberries and cranberries as test plots and also is wildlife food.
Okay.
Very close related. In his book, The Natural Gardens, there's one species of Vaccinium mentioned, which happens to be the species that I did my PhD work on.
Okay.
It's interesting, with all the work he did on Vacciniums and blueberries, that's the only one that shows up in his book, and I always took a little pride in that.
Right.
That it was specifically in there. But some of us suspect that some of the disjunct populations of cranberry that are down east that have been found over the years, because most of the populations in North Carolina are in the mountains,
okay,
may have been from some of Wells' field work close to 100 years ago now.
Right.
It would be interesting if they are, but at the same time, the habitat also mimics, except for being so far south, their habitat further north.
Okay. And you mentioned in your previous answers that as a graduate student, maybe as a professional, you were always being led back to Wells.
Yeah. When I was working on my master's, I got an internship with the Division of State Parks in what was then called the Natural Areas Program.
Okay.
One of my assignments that summer was to go out and document the Rockcliff Farm area.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in doing that, the first thing I had to do was go knock on the door and meet Bertram Whittier Wells in person. And even though I was an older graduate student at that time than, say, some of the other folks might be, I was in awe, just totally in awe. And when I went to his studio with him, and he showed me his paintings, including one that he had not finished of his wife, Maud. He believed in painting Mother Nature, and that's how he painted her. But he showed me some absolutely beautiful paintings that he had done. But we started talking, and he asked me about what was I reading, and so I started asking him questions, and he just lit up like a fluorescent light bulb. You know, when the starter comes on, it comes on. When I started asking questions, it was like he turned back the clock, and we had just an absolute delightful conversation.
Okay.
I wish I could remember verbatim even some of it. I just remember the sensation I got and the stimulation I got from it. So we went outside and walked around, and after a while, his wife, Maud, came to the door, and she hollered at him, "Bert, don't you go walking down the river with that boy." Because he was, at that point, around 90.
Mm-hmm.
And she was concerned about him falling or something down there. And he laughed and chuckled, and he said, "Well, I guess that means you'll have to go to the river by yourself." But he said, "Now, if you find something down there and you don't know what it is and you want to bring it back," and he said, "you know, just bring me back a leaf."
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know. But one of the other things that particularly struck me, he wanted me to understand the ecology of the farm, the old Rockcliff Farm. One of the reasons that he was attracted to the place wasn't just Ziegel's Rock and the geology of the place. It was because it's, and it still is, the best preserved record of the old Mangum terraces. And he wanted to be sure that I saw those and could identify those. Mr. Mangum was a soil conservationist who lived in northern Wake County. And as far as I know, that's still the best preserved example of the old Mangum terraces as a soil conservation technique. And it really went back to what I've given Wells credit for, but I think I sort of paraphrased what he said. But I always talk about B.W. Wells, his philosophy of man living in harmony with nature.
Okay.
He was not opposed to development, quote unquote.
Right.
But I believe if he were alive today, he would be appalled at some of the things that man has done, man's power over nature and how we've destroyed some of our most valuable natural communities and natural resources through unwise development.
Okay.
He, like I said, he had a very strong hand in the blueberry industry coming mm-hmm. to North Carolina. Very strong influence. He supported that type of thing, but he also believed it could be done and be compatible with preserving the natural heritage of the state.
Okay. You're a lifelong North Carolinian, or I don't know if you're a lifelong North Carolinian, but you're a native North Carolinian,
right.
And you live here now. And you talked about sort of how he chose Rockcliff Farms. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on why North Carolina proved to be such a suitable laboratory for Wells's work, or if you have any thoughts.
I've
on that.
Always wondered about that. You know, after he got his PhD and he came to North Carolina, exactly what motivated him? At the time he came to NC State, there were very few PhDs on campus. A lot of people don't realize that. That's one of the pieces of the heritage that I'm sure that some other folks have probably mentioned, but he had a major role in really taking what is now a world-class university, upgrading the academic level, bringing in more and more PhDs. He was constantly promoting that. I've heard stories of discussions in faculty meetings and with the deans and other folks about it. He was always wanting, when he became head of the botany department, he wanted more PhDs there. He didn't want to be the only one in the department.
Right.
He strongly believed that if you were going to do quality research and have quality teaching programs, that you needed to have that full-blown education that went with it.
Okay. And you mentioned also in one of your previous answers that he wasn't against development per se.
Right.
But he would be appalled at some of the directions the development's taken. And I wondered if you would elaborate on that.
Well,
thought.
I would say, sometimes I am amazed at how strong of an influence he's had on my life and some of the other people I know as well. I'm a lifelong just about believer in the value of our waterways.
Mm-hmm.
And Wells would have been one of the first to jump up and scream about an area like Crabtree Valley Mall being built. It was built in the floodplain.
Okay.
He would have been there because of the ecology of that floodplain, that big, broad floodplain, probably the widest floodplain in Wake County that was developed, and the loss of the plant and animal life there. But number two, I think he would have probably been standing there saying, you're going to cause major flooding downstream.
Okay.
So I served 6 years on Raleigh City Council, and I was the stormwater guy. Helped upgrade a lot of our regulations and also helped to improve a lot of the development that went on by improving their stormwater management.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have been right there with me waving the flag. It's not just preserving that. And he would also have been one of the staunchest supporters of the Greenway program, because that's a mechanism for preserving those riparian buffers along our stream corridors. And by doing so, you not only provide recreation for we human folks and an alternative means of transportation, but you preserve that incredible diversity that goes with those riparian buffers.
Okay. For a long time, Wells was more or less the botany department at State. That may be putting it too strongly, but he was obviously very central in it. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on how his personality and agenda shaped that department.
Well, you know, he was originally an entomologist,
mm-hmm. yeah,
which was always intriguing to me. But I could see how you could easily evolve from an entomologist into the various facets of the plant life that he did. And obviously those of us who are into ecology recognize the interdependence of both the plant and animal life and how important the insect world is as pollinators, sometimes as predators on many of our precious plants. But I know, you know, from what I've been told, and most of this is certainly hearsay, and there are other folks who could speak this, like Jim Troyer, who's documented a lot of it,
sure.
that he was constantly challenging his peers.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I've never had anybody give me a good example, I can imagine that there were times when he became very impatient because he was the consummate workaholic. His mind was running usually, even when I met him in his later years, I felt like I was racing to try to keep up with him as fast as his mind was moving. So I can imagine that he was setting a standard where everyone around him and the folks I've met that actually had him as a professor and actually got to meet a couple of his former graduate students said he was always challenging them.
Okay.
He was the conversation sometimes would be they would go in to ask a question and in turn would have to respond to about 50 questions from him.
Right.
So he was always challenging their minds, go a little bit further, go a little bit further.
So you've talked some about how he, you know, could be challenging or contentious. Maybe that's putting it too strongly. How do you think he do you think he would be comfortable with the direction that ecology has taken since he stopped working at?
There are probably parts of it that he would question, but when I look at some of the work that he did as one of the really truly a pioneer ecologist. One of the statements he made to me when I met him out at Rock Cliff Farm was, and I've heard this repeated by other folks who knew him when he was a teacher even, that you don't really understand a plant until you know its root system.
Okay.
And I can imagine him out there excavating plants. Because, and it's true. As a horticulturalist and as an ecologist, I have come to understand that even more. When I work in horticulture, I try to emulate what I know about the natural habitat of the plant. And in reality, that's what we ought to be trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to be successful with it and not have to use tons of fertilizer and pesticides, BWLs would have been right there on the cutting edge again telling people how to do conservation gardening with composting, using the natural fertilizers and not going out there using the infamous turf food and so on to grow what I've always called the perennial corn crop, the lawns that we try to grow. But again, the real thing with him was trying to copy, learn from Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm.
The particular species I work with on my PhD, if we had not fully investigated the root system of that species, we wouldn't have the understanding of it that we have now because it has a very, very unique root system. There are very few plants in the plant kingdom that have a root system close to what that particular species has.
Right.
And all the taxonomy that had been done on that species previously had focused on the above-ground parts of the plant. Very little documentation of the root system. In fact, there are tons of specimens preserved in herbaria across the country and around the world that don't even have a piece of the root system. And that's one of the most fundamental characteristics of that species.
Okay. And what personal qualities would you say most define BWLs? You've talked about this some.
Well, you know, there are a lot of academics that shy away from the political world.
Mm-hmm.
BWLs was willing to speak out. And I believe in today's climate, he would probably be a much louder voice. Some of his contemporaries over at UNC, like Coker and Totten, mm-hmm. also had that reputation. And they were also founding members of the North Carolina Wildflower Preservation Society, as it was originally called. They were willing to speak out. They believed, as academics, it was part of their role to help to educate the public in every aspect. And they also believe that there ought to be a lot of freedom on the academic campus to fully discuss all philosophies, all thinking, and I'm sure that any one of them, and Wells would be right at the front of that pack, would have said, okay, back in the days, and I'm sure he probably had some things to say back in the days when the McCarthy trials were going on, say, we need to discuss this, you need to fully understand it before you condemn it. And the way to defeat it is to fully understand it and understand that our form of government is far superior. That if you can do that, the right side is going to win. So, and when he looked at any form of government, he would have been saying, let the people know the facts. Give them the truth, the whole truth, not partial truth, and let them use their minds. But you also need to develop those minds so they have the intelligence to make good decisions.
Okay. And I wondered if you could talk, and again, you've talked about this throughout the interview, but I wonder if you could speak... try to encapsulate what B.W. Wells' legacy was in general, you know, in North Carolina as an ecologist, et cetera.
Well, his book, The Natural Gardens, I think, speaks a lot because it was written in a popular format so that anyone could pick it up and read it. And occasionally I just go pick it up. And even though some of the nomenclature has been changed and so on, as I learned... former employee of the Natural Heritage Program, we have a much more complex way of describing the plant communities. But he put it in a format that anyone with a reasonable level of education and intelligence could understand and appreciate the real diversity of North Carolina. I've always wondered in my mind if he had any idea what he was coming to when he came to North Carolina. But it's evident from some of his early papers and some of the early documentation that he very quickly appreciated the diversity of the state. And I think once he got to North Carolina, you could have never gotten him to leave. He was devoted to it. And again, what he would be out there doing right now is telling people, these are the special places. These are the places worth preserving. But again, he would also be talking about how do you have those natural connections. Another reason why he would support something like a Greenway program in Raleigh is you create those natural corridors for the plants and animals to intermingle. We can have isolated populations of fox squirrels all over North Carolina, but they're probably going to eventually disappear if they cannot crossbreed and intermingle. And if they don't have sufficient habitat. So that's what he would be looking at, is how do you maintain... There's a lot of work done in ecology nowadays about what is a minimum size area. When I worked for state parks, that was part of my job, looking at the parks, doing the ecological assessment. Is this large enough to preserve the plant communities that we're really trying to preserve there, as well as the animal communities, to preserve the ecology of that site? So we would set minimum boundaries, and then we would set this is what the optimum would be.
Okay.
And most of the time, they fall somewhere in between.
Thanks again so much for talking with me. Is there anything else you wanted to add about B.W. Wells' life and legacy?
Well, the most interesting part to me has been knowing some of the people that were very close to him. His second wife, Maud Wells, became a very close personal friend, and she would share little tidbits and just get a remarkable twinkle in her eye. And I remarked to some of his other friends when Maud died that Dr. Wells was probably one of the luckiest men I ever knew from the standpoint of what I know about his first wife, Edna Metz Wells, and having known Maude, to have had two women in his life, to have had the tragedy of losing Edna Metz Wells, but then having Maude Wells step in. And she and herself, she was a remarkable person to know. And I can imagine from the stories I know, of course, having gone to Broughton High School, Edna Metz Wells is legendary over there. And we have the park just down the street where she used to teach her classes. And Dr. Wells and Edna Metz Wells live right next door to that. Mm-hmm. So there's a legacy there. But the other thing is the people that he influenced, the Lady Margaret Reed with her wildflower garden over here in West Raleigh that I helped preserve. I keep finding little places and people that Wells influenced. Jack Finch, Finch Blueberry Nursery down in Bailey. I'm not sure he ever really knew Dr. Wells, but he knew of him. And in a conversation I had with him at one point, he said the man had a tremendous influence on him. And I suspect that's one of the reasons Jack in his later years became Mr. Bluebird, building the bluebird houses and trying to preserve bluebird habitat. This was his little contribution to give something back to nature for what we were extracting from the wonderful blueberry industry we have in North Carolina.
All right, well, thank you so much.